Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And podcasts of prior shows are also available there under the tab for public affairs. Our topic tonight is This and That, Financial Planning Questions, and specifically listeners' financial planning questions. So if you guys have questions, tonight is the night to call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We are live. Kyle's in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. Again, the number is 610-758-8810, and you can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking live on air, you can give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And I do appreciate when listeners use that to send in questions, because it also helps me formulate topics for the radio show, things that you're interested in. Sometimes they're general questions, sometimes they're a little bit more complicated, but that helps me as well. I really, really appreciate that. And again, those questions could be submitted through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. But as long as we got you here live, then you can call in and either give your question to Kyle, or we'll put you through on air at 610-758-8810. So last week I talked about ping pong planning, which simply means trying to plan in an ever-changing tax environment. And so much of planning does revolve around taxes, but there are other financial planning considerations that we have as well. So tonight I do want to cover this, and you know, this and that, that's what I called it, this and that in financial planning, meaning there's so many different areas we could cover. It's just going to be a little bit of a hodgepodge tonight. Whatever questions might come to mind in your financial life, you can call in. And I have had some recent questions through the website, Your Financial Choices. So I thought I would start with those and then give you some typical questions that we're asked at the office as financial advisors. So Amy had sent this to me maybe 10 days ago or something. And she said, for someone who has no financial investment experience and wants to start, how do you decide on a financial advisor group? And I responded to Amy, thank you for the question and for listening to the show. To answer your question on deciding on a financial advisor or group for someone who has no financial investment experience, your options may be limited. And where I was going with that is, if someone has no experience, they may not have a lot of money saved at this point. And typically when you're talking about, you know, financial advisors, you're usually talking about people who are managing money for individuals, and they don't make financial advisors aren't going to make a lot of money on $1,000. They're probably not going to make any money on $1,000. So generally, financial advisors might have minimums, minimum fees, minimum assets that they're going to manage. So when you talk about how do you decide who you're going to work with as a financial advisor, if you have minimal experience or minimal assets, it could be difficult. So one of the things you could do is you know, listen to the show, this show weekly. It starts giving you ideas and educating you on topics and encouraging you to save and do things like that. So that's one way to kind of build up your financial acumen by listening to financial shows. That's one way. You also could work with a firm. There are a number of firms. I'm not going to name any specifically, but firms that will have platforms that will allow you to open up accounts with minimal amounts. Sometimes people will start at a bank account, opening up an IRA with like a CD, because banks will let you open up a CD maybe with $1,000 and put it in an IRA. There are other brokerage firms out there that will do the same things. And they will often have tools on their website that could help you and educate you. Another option would be to use those, as I said, those resources or tools from that website, but also maybe if you have an employer from that offers an employer 401k, quite often the employer 401k plan will be with a particular custodian, trustee of the plan, and they may have tools on their website as well that could help you. So you may not be working exactly with a financial advisor, but you're working with custodians or trustees of either 401k plans, IRAs, brokerage firms that have tools on their website that could help you and provide some financial guidance, or even 1-800 numbers that you can call and maybe ask for some information. You may not get guidance on investment selection or asset allocation necessarily if you only have a minimum amount of money, because maybe you're getting in and you're not paying fees for advice. But quite often there will be things like target date funds that someone could use that provides an asset allocation that would be appropriate for your time horizon. And that automatically reallocates over the years. That's a great option. And by the way, I didn't give Amy all of this extra detail in my email back to her. I did respond back to her, but these are just some ideas. You can also research financial advisors using the CFP website. It's CFP, so Certified Financial Planner, CFP.net. So the CFP.net website, in there, you can search for certified financial planner professionals. And in your area, you can do it by zip code. And when you get a list of some of those financial advisors in your area, you can then go to their website and look to see what kind of services they provide. If they have minimums, maybe they would charge an hourly fee for some advice. Many financial advisors might do that. Some financial advisors will meet with you without an initial fee. Some people will do like an intro telephone call for no fee. You can check out, you know, on someone's website, on these financial advisors' websites, to see what they would do for you. So I think this is a great place to start, and then independently research those advisors and firms. Click in deeper on their website, you know, if there's bio pages, if you can go to FINRA.org and check their brokerage history or see if there's any complaints, that type of thing. All right, so I hope that helps, Amy. We did have some other questions, which I'm going to go over when we come back from this next break. Carolyn had asked about working and Social Security, so I'm going to cover that, and also something about mortgage interest. And then we had a follow-up question from last week from Carol, who was giving me a little bit more detail about her question that she had last week on some discrepancies in the tax returns and the IRS attentiveness to resolving those discrepancies. So folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Tell your friends and family, and you can listen online anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world at WDIY.org. I wanted to add one more thing to Amy's question about deciding on a financial advisor or group for someone who has no financial investment experience. There, you know, I had done a show, I don't know when, because I've done a lot of shows over the years, but if you go to WDIY.org or to YourFinancialChoices.com, we do have podcasts of prior shows. And if you scroll through there, those shows, and there are a lot of shows listed, there was a show I had done, I believe, once on what does it mean to be a financial advisor? Because that could have very different meanings, and there I think I did a whole show on it. Okay, like what is a CFP practitioner, what is a broker, what is a financial advisor, what kind of experience does someone need? It can mean very different things, and you could get very different results depending on who you're talking to. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. Some of the questions we've had come through the website, Your Financial Choices, are wonderful, and I really appreciate them. So Carolyn had emailed me last week. She said her husband has the option of possibly picking up more part-time work while he's retired. Since he's collecting Social Security, we don't want him to go over the max before he is penalized. Can you please talk about this, that this is for him and for others? And I will do that in just a moment, but we have a call from Alan in Easton, and I want to go right to that. Hello, Alan. It's Lori. Can you hear me?
Hello, Lori. Yes, I can hear you.
Great. How can I help you?
I am a widower. I have an adult son who doesn't need anything I have except my love, but I don't have a will, and I'm wondering, you know, what type of documents, what type of information do I need to present to an experienced attorney or whoever writes wills, and how do I go about choosing an executor?
Okay. Is your son capable and able to
Oh, yeah, he's extremely capable. He's a professional in his field.
Okay. All right. Well, Alan, it sounds to me, you know, I usually, and I think I even did a show on this, there's a list I typically go through when someone's doing estate planning to kind of understand their goals. Sometimes people have goals to save taxes. Sometimes people have goals to spend all their money to the last dollar. Some people want to pass assets on to their family. Some people want to be charitably inclined and pass on their assets to charity. Once we kind of know those answers, then we say, well, let's take an inventory of your assets. What do you have? Some people will have a home. Some people will have retirement accounts, maybe a bank account, maybe a brokerage account, personal property, car, maybe stamp collection or something like that. Then we'll say, who is this going to, based on those goals you had, and how do we best get it to them? And when we're looking at the heirs or who's going to get your assets, we also look at their capabilities. Are they capable of receiving these assets? Are they responsible? Do we have to worry about a possible failed marriage or drug addiction or special needs? And depending on those capabilities, it really kind of directs us all the way down till we get to the end to say, okay, how do we make it happen? Some people, you know, I always recommend that you have a will and power of attorney, durable power of attorney, healthcare directives, and that kind of stuff. But you may never end up using the will, depending on your own assets and your own situation. So I'm just going to throw out a quick example. Let's pretend you told me son doesn't need anything, and I have had a favorite charity, that I've loved forever, and they've done well by my family, and I see them helping the community, and I would love for my favorite, you know, community foundation or radio station or university to have this money because my child doesn't need it. And you told me you had a big IRA. I might say, hey, Alan, let's talk about that then, because your IRA is income taxable. And maybe you don't need to leave that to your son. You could leave it to a charity because they don't pay tax on it. So that could be one thing we would do. And if you say, well, I just have the house. Well, the house then, when you pass away, would go through your estate, because if it's in your name alone, well, then you do need that will. And that will is going to say where you want that to go. And typically, if you're going to sell the house, the executor who you appoint would be have the responsibility to kind of report your assets, pay any inheritance tax if we have that, and then distribute, pay your bills, pay the final expenses, things like that, and then distribute the money where you want it. And that could be, again, to charity if you want in your will, if it's just your house, or it could go to your son if he's capable. It could go to your grandchildren if you have any. It could go to your neighbor. It could go wherever you want. So you have to kind of go through those goals I mentioned, like what are you hoping to accomplish? Then take your inventory, understand your heirs and who you want it to go to. But, you know, from my perspective, if your son is a professional and very responsible, there's no reason he couldn't be your executor.
Okay. I didn't know whether that would be a good situation or not.
Sure.
Now, to choose a, you know, I'm not asking for a specific recommendation, of course, but to choose an estate planner, a will writer, or whatever, however you would call, what would be my best plan?
Okay.
Who would I start contacting, or what group would I start contacting, whatever?
Okay. Well, I don't know if you have, you know, a computer and the internet and a website.
Oh, of course, I do, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, one thing, I have had a number of attorneys who've been guests on the radio show, so you can always go back and listen to some of the shows I've done on estate planning and see what's out there, or listen to them and see if there's one that might resonate with you. But typically what I'm looking for when I'm trying to help a client understand their options with attorneys, I want to understand how complicated your situation is. If your situation is really complicated, where you might have business interests, maybe second marriage, multiple children, blended family, then
I'm a simple person. I don't have any complications in my life.
Okay,
believe me.
Well, sometimes then I would want to maybe go to an attorney who has resources, other lawyers in their firm that have other disciplines that they may be able to assist with.
Right.
But then I look to your geographical location to see, if there's someone in your area where you live, that it makes it easy to go meet with them and sign documents and feel comfortable with an attorney. So, and I also really appreciate when an attorney, they can't say they have like an expertise, but an attorney who really does estate planning and estate documents, it does make a difference in my opinion. So I would definitely check that out. Now, James just pointed out there is a website, estateplanning.com, and I don't know if they can direct you toward attorneys. There's also what used to be called Martindale Hubbell, and I think it's just Martindale. That's a little more complicated looking for an attorney, but I would generally kind of try to look in your area where you live so that it will be convenient for you, but also one that's an estate planning.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you... go on our website and look me up and call me, I could give you more direction.
Okay. Yeah, I understand that part. And I will look back at some of your prior shows and see if I can get a reference from them too, Laurie. So.
Yeah. Okay. Good job, Alan. Right. I think you're going to feel a lot better having that behind you just to get it done, because you never know. And I think it's a good idea to have a will.
Okay.
Wonderful.
All right. I don't have a lot of money, but I have a lot of art books.
Okay.
I don't think anyone's going to want them.
Well, the library. So, okay. You take care. Good luck. Have
all
a good
right.
One.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, folks. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY, Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11, offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus Swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
Welcome back. This is your host, Laurie Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Thanks, Alan, for calling in. I love that question, and I love questions in general. So if you have any, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. So Carolyn had emailed through the website, Your Financial Choices, the question about her husband possibly picking up more part-time work while he's retired. Since he's already collecting Social Security, she didn't want him to get penalized. And what she means by that is Social Security has a cap of how much earnings you can have if you're collecting. They might make you pay some back, but that's just part of the story, because they only make you pay some back if you collect early. Once you're full retirement age, you don't have to pay anything back and you can earn as much as you want. So once you reach full retirement age, you could make $1 million and not have to pay anything back. It's if you collect early that you would have to pay something back. And there's a couple little nuances to that. And I'll tell you the one of them that is harder to explain. But if you, in the year of full retirement, if you're working and you collect, then you only have to pay back, I think, one of every $3 over that cap up until your full retirement age. So there could be a little bit of a payback, but not as much if you collect earlier than the full retirement age year. So if you collect before the full retirement age year, then you have to pay back $1 for every $2 over these caps. And let me see if I actually, I don't know if I wrote those down. I think it's about $18,000 now. I'd have to ballpark that. I didn't look that up, and I'm sorry about that. I responded to Carolyn that she didn't have to worry about the cap because her husband was full retirement age. But so Social Security, there could be a payback if you're over full retirement age. Once you're full retirement age, you can make as much money as you want. And I'll talk more about Social Security when I come back. But right now we have this another question. We have Ken on line two, and Ken is from Emmaus. Ken, can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How can I help you?
So I'm 66. I'm still working. I'm about to retire. I live in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to find out if there's any advantage between Pennsylvania and Delaware. And I mentioned Delaware only because I want to be closer to a rail line up and down the East Coast.
Uh-huh. Okay, so that's interesting. So that you can travel, I suppose, huh?
I would like to drive less.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, venture from, you know, all from Boston, you know, down to D.C. Mm-hmm. Via rail as opposed to driving.
That's cool. Okay, so you're about to retire, and you wonder if there's any advantage to retiring in Pennsylvania or Delaware. Well, Pennsylvania is one of the states that a lot of people will retire in. And one of the reasons is Pennsylvania doesn't tax retirement benefits. They don't tax our 401k distributions. They don't tax our IRA distributions. They don't tax pensions. They don't tax Social Security. And in fact, once you retire, if your only income is like interest and dividends, if it's below a certain threshold, they call it the eligibility income, you can qualify for special tax forgiveness. They don't even count your Social Security or your pension or your retirement distributions as income in determining that eligibility limit. So a lot of people, when they retire, don't even pay income tax in Pennsylvania. Delaware does tax, I think, distributions from pensions and 401ks. They follow federal in that. But just quickly looking this up, it looks like they do reduce your federal income. There's an adjustment to Delaware income for Social Security. So Delaware isn't going to tax your Social Security, but they would tax your 401k or IRA distributions.
Okay.
Now, what else was I going to say about that? I just lost my train of thought. So what you want to do, though, is you also need to compare things like real estate taxes, sales tax, and the state income tax. So there is a website, and I think it's called retirementliving.com. I'm going off the top of my head here, but it was, if that's the right website, what was really great about this website, and I used to access it all the time, it compares the states and all the underlying taxes, because Delaware otherwise does not have, like, their real estate taxes in Delaware are really low, is my recollection. Mm-hmm. So you kind of want to weigh all of that. And the benefit of you taking the rail versus having to drive. If you could give up a car, you could end up saving a lot of money. So you really want to compare it, apples to oranges. But not taxing retirement accounts could be a very big thing if you have a big retirement account.
No, that's really good, because maybe I'll move right down to the border.
There you go. Yeah. Closer to Philadelphia. Yeah. Cause you can get right there. Yeah. Ken, that's a great question. I really like it. I love the show tonight because I love these questions and people come up with really good ones. And that would be even a topic in itself to talk about. In fact, next week I am going to talk about navigating your options in retirement planning. I'm going to add that to it. So, Ken, I hope you can listen next week, because I'm going to piggyback off what you've just said there, where to retire as part of the options in retirement planning. So I appreciate your question. It really fell in a good place tonight. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And for all your listeners and everybody in PA, just, you know, we'll listen to you next week. And if you can dive into that and really kind of parse the particulars about it, a lot of people will benefit from it.
Yeah, and I'll confirm that website too for comparing. Okay, I'll do that next week as well. All right, thanks, Ken. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Folks, I just love these questions coming in. And the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me. Or give your question to Kyle, and he'll write it down if you don't want to talk live on air, and I'll read the question and answer it. So just piggybacking off of Carolyn's question about the Social Security, and I think I'll talk about this a little bit more next week as well. Just want to mention about qualifying for retirement benefits. When we talk about Social Security, we talk about earning that benefit and not, getting penalized by collecting early Social Security and working and having to pay some of it back. If you have to pay some of it back, it does kind of roll back into your benefit, in the future. But you do have to earn so many credits to qualify for Social Security. You need 40 credits or 10 years of work. And it doesn't have to be all, you know, in a row. Just off the top of my head, I know that Social Security, they take the top 35 years of work. So what happens is quite often you'll find in those early years, in your teen years, maybe when you're working, you make, you know, $2,000. And then in your final years of work, you might be making, you know, let's say $100,000. If you decide to quit working earlier than the full retirement age, the Social Security illustrations that they give you will show what your benefit would be at 62 and at full retirement age and at age 70. They base that on the earnings record that you have so far, plus assuming you're going to continue to work your final years at that top pay. So make sure you factor that in. Folks, I'm at the halfway point. I got to take a break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening. Thank you for listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, and Your Financial Choices with Lori Seabird. It's currently 73 degrees, fair skies. Looks like tonight mostly clear, low 48. Thursday, sunny skies, high 79. And Thursday night, mostly clear, low 53. Now back to Your Financial Choices with Lori Seabird.
Thank you, James. Sorry I had to cut there so quickly. Time's flying tonight, and I appreciate our listeners calling in with questions. Phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air or give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. You could also send questions through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. Some last comments on Social Security, and I think I will talk more about this next week when we talk about retirement planning options. Full retirement age now is 67, and that's for people 1960 and later. The rest of us between 1955 and 1959 was phased in from age 66, 66 and 2 months, 66 and 4 months, depending on what year you were born. So anyone born 1960 and later, full retirement age is 67. If you start collecting early at age 62, in a little example they give you in the retirement benefit booklet from Social Security, you take like a 30% cut almost. That's a big cut if you collect early. If you delay retirement, you actually earn 8% benefit each year. If you have longevity and life expectancy in your life, then you might want to delay. And again, we will talk about that next week in more detail. We have Larry from Bethlehem calling in with a question on line one. Larry, can you hear me?
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much for answering my call.
Wonderful.
I've got a situation that I've never had before. I just received a distribution from two trusts mm-hmm. that were set up by my mom, who passed away recently.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a resident of New York. She's not a Pennsylvania resident.
Mm-hmm.
One of the trusts, the taxes have been paid on the income from that trust throughout the years. The other trust held United States savings bonds, and no taxes were paid on the appreciation of the savings bonds.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand I'd need to pay the taxes on the distribution, you know, on the gain from those from my part of the trust. I guess my bigger question is there a taxability for the state, for income tax for the state of Pennsylvania? I'm a new resident here.
Okay.
On the total of the distribution itself.
Okay. As far as Pennsylvania goes, first of all, there's no inheritance tax because your mom was a resident of New York. As far as income tax goes, the trust might be a New York trust. Someone's going to file a trust tax return. And to the extent you received a distribution from those trusts, any income in excess of deductions, income tax deductions, may pass to you. And if you might be a 50% beneficiary, so if there was, you know, $10,000 of dividends on the trust and there was a $1,000 legal fee, that would leave $9,000 of taxable income. If they never made a distribution to you, the income gets taxed in the trust. If they made a distribution to you, the tax implications of the income that flows through to you on a tax reporting document called a K-1, a Schedule K-1. And that K-1 tells you how much income you have to report on your personal tax return. And if mom passed in 2021, then you don't have to worry about it till your 2021 tax return. If mom passed in 2020, it could be a fiscal year that went from 2020 to 2021. And so whoever's responsible for filing that tax return is going to let you know what tax year you have to report it in, but it would be net of any income tax deduction. So it's hard to say when you say one trust, the taxes have been paid. It kind of really depends on what's in the trust and what gets passed out to you. As far as the U.S. savings bonds, if there was a second trust that happened to hold U.S. savings bonds, depending on when mom passed away, there is an election that an executor can make on a final decedent's tax return to report all of the interest accrued to the date of death. It's called a Section 454A election. And sometimes what I have found when someone passes away, if they pass away in January, February, December, they didn't live the whole year, or maybe they lived the whole year, but they had huge long-term care expenses that would be deductions, then we could make an election to report all of that interest that was accrued on those savings bonds to date of death on that 1040, and then that avoids the income tax to our beneficiaries.
Would that be the 1040 or the 1041 that the trust would report on?
Well, if your executor, the trustee or the executor, there might not have been an executor, they can elect if it was technically mom's savings bonds, they might be able to report that on her final lifetime income tax return. But if they did not do that, or it does not make sense to do that, and they cash the bonds in the trust, then yes, that income will probably flow through to you, but just for federal income tax, because savings bonds don't have any state income tax implications.
Oh, super.
Yeah. Okay, so it would have...
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, thank you. But as far as the gross distribution, I don't have to worry about paying taxes.
Nope. It's just the whatever someone would have paid income tax on, if it's, you know, interest, dividends, that might pass to you. But no, not the gross distribution. Unless it was like IRA money or something like that. But that's not taxable for PA as well either. Okay.
Well, thank you so much. That was wonderful. I really appreciate your show.
Okay. Thanks, Larry. Thank you for calling. Have a good night. Great questions tonight. You know what totally fascinates me about this is you realize the scope of financial issues that we have to deal with every day. Across the board. I mean, we are talking about wills. We're talking about trust. We're talking about retirement. We're talking about, you know, Social Security questions. You know, and I feel for people who don't understand this, because as I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive. Because I'm telling you, folks, if you're in front of your decisions, you have so many more options than on the other side. And just to point out about that U.S. savings bonds, most people don't know about that election. Most people don't know about that election, and it could make a really big difference. If someone has U.S. savings bonds with accrued interest that they have not had to report, because we don't have to report them until it's redeemed, but in the event someone passes away, that election to report all of that accrued interest on the final income tax return for the decedent could make a difference. It really could. It could save a lot of taxes. I've had that for people. And then what happens is you actually could take the savings bonds. You don't have to even cash the savings bonds. I've done this. I don't know if Larry's still listening, but if the bonds haven't matured, the beneficiaries could put the bonds in their name, and that accrued interest to date of death, we could technically, if you make the election, report it on the final decedent's income tax return. When the bonds are eventually redeemed, then you just say, you know, less the amount reported to date of death on the decedent's income tax return. And basically, I just say less the amount under election 454A. Under section 454A, and I make sure we keep all the history in the backup and match it up and cross it off each year that we're redeeming the bonds and back out what was already reported, because remember, it's only to date of death. So anyway, great questions tonight. I really appreciate it. The phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. It's all men tonight, I've noticed. So sometimes it's the women against the men, but tonight it's all men. But it was all women who emailed me. So that's very interesting. So, Carolyn, we did answer your question about collecting Social Security. There is no penalty if you're working and collecting Social Security. If you're full retirement age, you can make as much as you want. Carolyn had also asked about mortgage insurance. I wasn't exactly sure where she was going with this, because there is something called PMI, which is primary mortgage insurance, which people often have to get if they don't have 20% equity in their home. Like when you go to buy a new home, if you don't have 20% down, so you don't have 20% equity, they'll require that you get primary mortgage insurance. And it could be that. That's not a choice, typically. You just, you know, get that. But I think she may have been referring to mortgage insurance, which people may buy to cover the mortgage if their, you know, spouse dies or something like that. I've never understood that, really. If someone can buy term insurance, which term insurance is pretty cheap, I'm not sure why anyone would buy mortgage insurance. Because I would think mortgage insurance, I'm just not familiar with it, so I can't really talk about it. But to me, if you could get term insurance is cheap, lasts for a period of time, and that could cover the mortgage. It could also cover, you know, your kids' education, replacement of your lost income of a spouse who was the earner, that type of thing. So I hope that helps. We also had from Carol, who had called last week, about some kind of discrepancies, I think, in the IRS refunds. She wanted to further clarify her question, and she said her question had to do with, since the end of the extended tax season, some clients are calling me asking about their refund. So she worked for AARP, I believe. Everyone else they know got their refund in 10 days, and it's been months since we filed their return and no refund yet. But what I'm finding is that there must be some discrepancy between the amount of their first two stimulus payments that they reported to us and what the IRS has on their records. I agreed, and I did mention that last week to Carol. I think that was one of the reasons that some refunds were being delayed, was because the recovery rebate credit, which we calculated on the 2020 return to make up for stimulus payments that people were shorted, may have been not correct because some people didn't know what they got or thought they didn't get it when they did get it, or they got a debit card and they never knew they got the debit card, so we said they didn't get it when the IRS thinks they got it. It's just a whole big mess. That could be part of that. In one case, she said the taxpayer was sent money for her deceased husband, which she returned, so we reported the net amount. In another case, the taxpayer said she did not get the second payment when it's possible that she did and didn't remember. And she asked, I was just curious to see if you were having the same type of experience, and if I'm right in thinking that there's a discrepancy between what we reported for the taxpayer versus what the IRS has on their records, is the reason for the lack of a prompt refund. And I responded to Carol, yes, I agree that the IRS will have to reconcile any discrepancies, and I expect that there will be a lot. I also learned that someone was told that the IRS had a bit of a crash in the system in April. I had not heard this, but that slowed down the processing of the returns that came in during that period of downtime. Not sure if that's true. I had mentioned that there are delays in the IRS taking additional steps to confirm identities of those getting refunds in some cases. I did just have a client call me today to tell me that she got her refund check finally in the mail and with an explanation from the IRS. So her she owed money. We thought she owed money. She had indicated that she hadn't paid her estimated tax payments when in fact she did. And she said she didn't remember paying her estimated tax payments. She might have done it all at once. I do have some more mature clients who don't want to deal with quarterly estimated tax payments. So they just lump it all into the first quarter payment and pay it. And then they, you know, it's a year later, they forget. So she had indicated that she hadn't made them when in fact she had. So the IRS had sent her a letter, and it didn't come really from the IRS directly. It came through, a service that they're using to verify identities of people. And I double-checked it and triple-checked it to make sure it was legit. She confirmed her identity, and then she gets her refund check, and they explained that what it was is she had made the estimated payment. So she got a big refund instead of owing the money. Folks, if you have questions, there's still a little bit of time. Phone number 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Psst! Did you know your phone is a radio? You can tune into WDIY anywhere on the go with WDIY's new phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store, and your phone will become your trusted radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone live and access your favorite music shows on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to Many Choices, Real Voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you are listening live to Your Financial Choices as you can on the WDIY app. As James has reminded me that there's also a two-week archive of our shows on the app. So you can go to wdiy.org and get archives of lots and lots of shows, but very conveniently getting the last 2 weeks of archive on the WDIY app. So check it out, please. Here's another refund, IRS notice, what's happening. We don't know what's going on. From a colleague, he had emailed all of us advisors and said, are any other advisors or tax reviewers hearing from clients that they received a check from the IRS with no letter, no description as to what the refunds are for? The only description as to what the check could possibly be for is written directly on it. But in my specific client's case, they actually owed for 2020. We're above the recovery rebate credit, so they couldn't understand at all why there was this refund. Now, remember, I just told you the story of my other client who owed. We wouldn't know why they were getting a refund, but they did get a letter, and the letter said it was because they made their estimated tax payments, which she forgot she had done. Why would other people be getting refunds? Well, luckily, I'm a member of the PICPA, the Pennsylvania Institute of Certified Public Accountants, and they have a wonderful, what we call listserv or a board where we can all, you know, send questions and answers to our fellow colleagues and kind of ferret out these issues that we run into. And what was in the chat room was that people were getting refund checks for Veterans were getting refunds, and let me tell you what it was. And it was kind of like refunds from prescriptions they had paid or something like that. So we dug a little deeper in the American Rescue Plan, copayment cancellations and refunds. Due to the passage of the American Rescue Plan in March 2021, copayments for medical care and prescriptions provided by the Veterans Health Administration during the period of April 6, 2020 through September 30, 2021 will be canceled. All copayments paid to VA for medical care and prescriptions during the period of April 6 to present will be refunded. And we believe that's some of those checks that are coming in. We have a question, a caller, Rebecca from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi.
Hi, are you calling from Rhode Island or are you on the road?
No, I'm on the road. I'm actually on Route 100, heading to my family farm in Chester County.
Oh, okay. How can I help you?
So my sister and I are co-executrix of my father's estate. It is a farm of about 47 acres. Mm-hmm. It has two houses on it. We sold one mm-hmm. with two and a half acres, and we will split the profits from that. And the market value, obviously, is good, and we had a bidding war, and that's all good news. But right. the rest of the property, my sister would like, and she and her husband are going to buy me out.
Mm-hmm.
They are claiming that it is the assessment at date of death that is the amount that we have to figure on. And I'm wondering, because the market is considerably more more aggressive now, whether mm-hmm. it isn't the market value of
mm-hmm.
the property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rebecca, I would, in these kind of cases, first of all, between the family members, you kind of have to talk about it. If it's a Pennsylvania property, it's going to be subject to inheritance tax, and it really needs to be valued. You need to have an appraisal. If it's going to be sold to an arm's length transaction, meaning to someone who, comes off the street, the fair market value could be much more than that assessment value, much more. So if I would say, and I'm not an attorney, but what I would say is if the house is staying in the family, or if the house is to one person, when I say that, or like if you're the sole beneficiary, or if there's a spouse or something, and you're not going to sell it, then sometimes you can get away with that assessment value. But generally, for inheritance tax purposes, they want an appraisal or a sold and realized that establishes the fair market value in an arm's length transaction. I would say between your sister and you, I think it would be fair to get an appraisal.
Well, we have the appraisal from date of death. But you're saying we should get another appraisal now.
Well, when was the date of death? Is it within a year or two?
Yeah, it was December 1st.
Okay. Well, I would say that probably could be fair. I think what you're saying then is since December 1st, the values have gone up even more. I thought you meant the assessment in the assessment rolls. So I think that the appraisal at date of death is probably okay. Oops, we lost Rebecca. Rebecca may still be able to hear me if she's listening to the radio in the car. So Rebecca, I think that if you did get an appraisal as of December 1st, if it's between family members, you get along, that's probably going to be fine. You would avoid probably the selling expenses that you otherwise would incur if you sold it to a third party. So you have to factor that in as well, that you would be saving probably a hefty amount of commissions, settlement charges, if you do it with your sister. So that is probably kind of the give in the price valuation. But if you're not comfortable with that, then you can work with your sister to kind of establish whether, there's some other agreement that you can come up with. But the if you do something less than the appraisal, may be considered not arm's length, and then you'd have to worry about the valuation that you're going to use for the inheritance tax return. All right. And I hope you guys made a payment on account at 3 months to get the discount for paying early for inheritance taxes, because you save 5%. So I hope you were able to do that, and I hope you were able to hear this. Thank you for calling in. I'm sorry that the connection was lost. So We have been talking about this and that, financial planning questions. And it's interesting to me that there have been quite a bit of estate planning questions this evening. So I will make sure that we do a show maybe in the next couple weeks on this if I can. I'm going to ask another attorney to come on, someone that I said that I would have on and I haven't had on yet. So I will work on that. Some other of this and that financial planning questions that we get from time to time are things like, what pension options should I select? When should I collect Social Security? How much emergency reserve should I have? What is a backdoor Roth IRA? So I think what I will do, since I've decided that next week I am going to talk about navigating your options in retirement planning, I am going to probably fold in some of the questions about should I collect Social Security, because I do have more to talk about on Social Security, and what pension option I should select. Just highlight that, because again, for anyone who has access to WDIY.org or Your Financial Choices, we have podcasts of prior shows there. And a few weeks ago when I was out, I had Rod Young, who's a CPA CFP, and Jackie Cornelius, who's a CFP and enrolled agent. They were my guest host when I was out and did a whole show on pension options. And I believe they covered quite a bit of information there. So I will just do a little highlight of that as part of the navigating your options in retirement planning. What I also want to talk about in that show is how do you fund your cash flow? How do you give yourself a paycheck? How do you budget? So navigating your options in retirement planning is what we're going to do next week. So that's where I'll talk about what pension option should I select and when should I collect Social Security. As far as how much emergency reserve should I have, that also is a frequent question, especially for people who are good savers, because they always want to have a reserve. And a lot of times they'll only tell you about one account. They won't tell you about the other couple of accounts they have. They don't want you to know that you know, the emergency reserve they tell you they have, you know, is actually on top of this other reserve. When I first started in this business, we used to say 3 months. And then as we went through all these different financial crises, we started saying 6 months. And then we have more financial crises, and then we say a year. And I think especially in an environment where employment isn't always guaranteed, and people don't have pension options like they used to. As we get closer to retirement, you could be more vulnerable. You could be more vulnerable as you get into, let's say, your early 50s, as you know, a target for, you know, a layoff or something like that. I think having a year emergency reserve is a great idea. It doesn't mean it has to be in your bank account earning nothing. And this is where sometimes people will say, but I don't want to have it in my bank account earning nothing. Well, you could probably put it in some kind of short-term bonds or CDs. They're not earning a lot of money. CDs get tied up. If you need the money, there's a penalty on that. You know, there is some comfort in having cash. And when we talk about next week, navigating options and retirement planning, when someone feels that they could maybe retire early, maybe before they are eligible for Social Security, maybe before they are old enough to take out of their IRAs, meaning you have to be age 59 and a half to avoid a penalty on an early withdrawal, you know, or withdrawal from your IRA, that emergency reserve could really come in handy. Because when we talk about emergency reserves, maybe you're getting close to retirement. You want to retire early, but you're not going to be able to tap that IRA till you're 59 and a half. And your emergency reserve might be 2 years or 3 years. You might want enough to bridge you to age 59 and a half, or maybe enough to bridge you to Social Security age. So emergency reserve kind of depends, but I feel very comfortable with having, you know, 6 months to a year at least. And, you know, once you're age 59 and a half, if you have IRAs, you could always tap an IRA. I feel much better for people when they can tap that money without any penalties. All right. And then the backdoor Roth IRA, we'll talk about that next week as well. I want to thank everyone again for calling in tonight. The questions were absolutely great. I hope that Rebecca was able to hear us. If not, Rebecca, you can always reach me through yourfinancialchoices.com. Send your question. Any of our listeners can send questions through that website, yourfinancialchoices.com. I don't take your information. I don't hound you. I don't reach back out to you. I simply answer your question and tell you thank you much for listening. This is an educational program. And I like to arm people with as much information as I can so that they can go out there and make the best decisions for them, or at least guide them in having conversations with their own financial professionals, their own attorneys and insurance agents, whatever it might be. We do talk generally, but it is educational, and I hope it's enough to help you in your financial decisions and being able to have these conversations with your professionals and be proactive, not reactive, as I'll say in just a moment. So folks, thanks so much for being here. Kyle, thanks for taking the calls tonight. Greg, for hanging out, and James for being here covering as well. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate our callers this evening. Thank you so much to Larry, Ken, Rebecca, and Alan, and our people who sent in questions through the website, Carolyn, Carol, and Amy. Really appreciate it. Next week, Navigating Your Options in Retirement Planning. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.